You're listening to Make the Game with Matt Hackett.
Welcome to Make the Game. I'm Matt Hackett. Thank you so much for being here on this, the first ever episode of Make the Game. Let's discuss how to build a career's worth of game development knowledge. And at the end, I'll give you some tips on how to retain this knowledge and how to dive as deep as you want. But before we get into that, this is the very first episode of Make the Game. So let's take a minute to get acquainted. As the intro covered, I am Matt Hackett, a game developer and artist and author now, currently living in California with my lovely wife, Andrea Abney, and dog, Koopa. I've been making games for fun for 30 years, and for money for 12 years now. Wow. If you already know me or my work, it's probably through Lost Cast. Welcome, Lost Cast listeners. Get those tiger hats ready. If not, Lost Cast is a podcast I ran for 6 years with my good friend Jeff Blair as part of Lost Decade Games, the indie game company we founded together in 2010. The other way you might know me or my work is through A Wizard's Lizard, which was easily our most successful game from LDG. Anyway, that's me. We'll get to know each other better over time as the show progresses. Now, let's talk about this new show, Make the Game. Make the Game. We're going to be talking about making games, of course, but that's a pretty broad topic. So let's narrow that down a little bit. It's hosted by me, of course, so it's going to be mostly about things I'm interested in and working on, which includes solo game development and finding your itch or your true passion. That's very important to me. Also, unconventional ways to be inspired to make games. Like, for me, I draw lots of inspiration from cooking, because I cook a lot. So I take lots of the lessons I learned there, and I apply it to making games. And I think that's a pretty interesting place to analyze. These aren't the only things we'll talk about, of course, but those will likely be the overall focus. I'll be doing interviews with fellow game developers as well, which should really widen the spectrum of topics. So almost anything's going to be on the table eventually. Also, user experience will pop up a lot, too, because my wife, Andrea, is a UX expert. So just by being in her orbit, my games have, you know, more UX work than probably most indie games, I'm guessing. So that's what to expect from the show. Thanks for being here. Now let's dive into the topic of the day. Building a career's worth of game development knowledge. This felt like a great place to start the podcast because it's a jumping off point for deep learning about game development. From gamedeveloper.com to Game Maker's Toolkit, let's talk about where to learn how to make games and make them well as some of my very favorite resources. When I was growing up, information was sparse, man. I was learning how to program video games in 1992, right before the internet was a thing, right? Like, you couldn't Google stuff, you couldn't post a question on a forum, you could barely find any books on the topic at libraries or bookstores. Today, there's a different problem. There are too many resources, right? There's too many game engines, there's too many tutorials, there's too many books, there's too many everything. It's overwhelming. But here's something to think about. There's literally too much information out there for you to consume it all. You can't read every article, watch every video, go to every conference. You just can't. There aren't enough hours in the day. It's kind of liberating, right? You categorize stuff into noise and stuff that you actually want to pay attention to and focus on. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to point you to places where you could get lost and deep dive on whatever interests you, but I'm also going to give you a couple of curated shortlists to start with that are among my favorites. So let's start big with just four places you can start that are so deep you'll almost certainly get lost in the depths, right? Like, if you want to, you can find the topic of your interest and dive deep. So first off, go to gamedeveloper.com. Now, this used to be gamasutra.com, which is also still up. But they smartly renamed and rebranded, right? Things are a little funky right now as the transition between the two sites happens, but it's still a treasure trove itself, honestly. You could have fun learning on gamedeveloper.com all day. Next is Game Maker's Toolkit, which you've probably heard of, as it's one of the largest game development YouTube channels. Hosted by Mark Brown, his slick, high-quality videos and soothing voice will educate you and entertain you. It's been especially interesting to get the perspective from a gamer instead of a developer, but those days are over as Mark is now making his own games. So if you haven't watched Game Maker's Toolkit before, he has just upped the game by making his own stuff. So it's really cool. I will be recommending some of his specific videos later on. Lost Garden by Daniel Cook of Spry Fox. So I'm going to quote the website directly here. Quote, You've found a rare treasure trove of readable, thoughtful essays on game design theory, art, and the business of design. Which is all true. There's the equivalent of a large textbook, seriously, at this website. And it's all free. Lostgarden.home.blog. Check that out and pick an article, read it. It'll probably be long, but like so educational. And entertaining, again. Okay, last of the four places where you can go and just dive deep. Red Blob Games. This is for the technical listener, featuring tons of tutorials on fundamental stuff like node management, pathfinding. It's not for if you're just into arts or just game design, you might find it too technical, but highly recommended for the programmers among you. That's redblobgames.com. Okay, those are all great places to start, but I know a little intimidating and time-consuming, so let's narrow it down. I have hundreds, maybe thousands of game dev resources bookmarked, and I've compiled a short list of the right, very best stuff for you. Game Dev Treasure. Okay, let's talk about this. Rictor.github.io/gamedevtreasure. This is an old project of mine that's still up on GitHub. As of this recording, it's over 30 resources that, to me, are the cream of the crop. It would take hours to read all these articles and watch all these videos, but I kid you not, I so highly recommend them. Like, I made a whole website dedicated to just housing these, so go do it. But, you know, I honestly think it would take like an entire day, like 24 hours to consume all that stuff. So if 30 is too many, here's an even tighter, shorter list of just seven. Seven is a manageable number, right? It's like about the length of a phone number. We can handle it. I posted this recently as a Twitter thread, which did well. I'm really pleased with that. And in my newsletter, which, newsletter segue. Perfect segue. Look at that. I should mention the newsletter, though, honestly, because it's a good resource and I believe in it. I literally just posted to it this morning with a bunch of roguelike tips. But the Valadria newsletter is what it is. You can go sign up to it at valadria.com. And it's a good resource to this podcast, Make the Game, because I will be posting show notes there and links to all the stuff that I'm talking about. Here's stuff I've posted recently. How to Decide What Game to Make, a guide for helping you pick a game concept. An announcement about my book, How to Make a Video Game All by Yourself. And the article about roguelike development that I mentioned. But then most recently, the 7 game dev resources that are so good they will change how you speak. That's right. When going through all these resources, I was thinking about the ones, like there's ones that enter my mind often and that I apply to my designs and to my game development. But then there's ones that really come forward where, you know, they alter my language, much as like watching The Simpsons growing up. I just say Simpsons references all the time. And these 7, this tight list, are the ones where they're integrated into my language now, right? And like, I almost can't think of a more like highly recommended, what else could I say to you other than it changed how I speak? So these to me are the best ones. You got to check these out. All right, let's go through them. Sequelitis, 1. Mega Man Classic versus Mega Man X. This is an interesting one because it's created by Aaron Hansen of Game Grumps fame. Sequelitis is a short series that compares classic games to their sequels, such as Mega Man and Castlevania, contrasting the designs to see which is better and why. This is an excellent practice you can do yourself, by the way. Play game 1, then play game 2, like the sequel, maybe even 3, and then try to see exactly what's different and whether you like it or not. It's weird, but I feel lucky to be alive in a time where a video like this exists. I'm serious. It's kind of this entertaining, high-quality, insightful video that just didn't exist when I was growing up. It didn't. Nowhere would you be able to find this. It's so good. It's like a cartoon about level design. I highly recommend it. Go check it out. Okay, Juice It or Lose It, 2. Juice It or Lose It is probably the video to watch on cheap, effective video game polish. If you work on games, you will eventually hear people talking about the word juice. So this is one that I haven't just seen change my own language, but I've seen it, you know, reflected in the games industry, right? If you're not familiar, juice refers to the elements of your game that make it feel really good, like bouncing, squishing, twisting, tweening, rotating, scaling, and gushing particles everywhere. But the twist with juice is that it's not just polish. It's polish that's simple to implement. Scaling things up and down in code is trivial, and so is easing them in or out to make them animations feel realistic. Playing sounds, particles, these are all things that game engines do with little effort, right? So juice needs to be part of your language, and it all came from juice it or lose it. Along the same lines as juice it or lose it is oil it or spoil it. Written by Defender's Quest developer Lars Doucet, it's got a bunch of examples of oil. So oil is, say you've got a squeaky door. Every time you go into your room, it squeaks and it's annoying to you, and you find yourself just not even wanting to mess with it. Grab some oil, squeak the door, it's quiet, your life is better. It's that kind of concept, but you apply it to game design. Here's my favorite example from the Final Fantasy series, which I've been playing since the very first game. They're on like, what, 15 now? But I was there as a kid playing Final Fantasy 1 on the Nintendo Entertainment System. And so you wanted to buy healing items. This is a role-playing game, a classic JRPG, right? And you wanted to buy like healing potions because they helped you out because you'd run out of magic really fast. And so you could have up to 99 of them and they were very cheap. But the problem was you had to buy them one by one, right? So at the time, if you were lucky enough to have an NES Advantage or an NES Max, which were these game pads among the first ones ever that had like a turbo button that let you hit A real fast, you know? What my buddies and I would do is we would take like an NES Max or something, put it on the ground, and then put something kind of weighted, like a shoe or a shoebox or, you know, some toys or something. Put it on the gamepad to hold the button down. And then you walk away, and like half an hour later, you'd have 99 healing items. But otherwise, you'd be sitting there just like, bing, 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 with your thumb, you know, like getting repetition injuries and taking forever and being really boring. So you had to figure it out. Anyway, that's a system that really needed to be oiled. And you can see that in the Final Fantasy series, where the later games, when you go to shops, there's a quantity where you just go, I want the healing potion and I want 99, done. Right, that is a great example of oil. And there's others on Lars's amazing article, which I will link to in the show notes. Check it out, go read it. I feel like oil is lesser known than juice. So if you have oil in your arsenal and in your language, you've got to level up. You've got a leg up on the competish. So here's number four. How to make your game look good if you're not an artist. This is the newest entry in my list of game development goodies, and it's mercifully short. If you watch only one video from all this gold I'm throwing at you, make it this one because it's just 1 minute long. And I really do feel like it's one of those videos that plays in your head afterwards. It stays with you. The moral of the story is keep it simple. And you've probably heard that before and hopefully even do it yourself. But this video gives keep it simple some visual examples, providing ways to be effective with just simple shapes and a few colors. Definitely check it out. Along those lines of shapes and colors, this one is an article on gamedeveloper.com. This is called The Aesthetics of Game Art and Game Design. So speaking of simple shapes and colors, this article dives deeper into the shapes and forms and what they mean to us. It talks about player psychology, composition, and gives you ways to communicate better visually. For example, a circle is nice and soft. You see it and it doesn't imply anything to you other than comfort, roundness, maybe calmness. But if you see a triangle, you'll have three sharp points. And if you saw that in a game, you might think, you might feel threatened, right? It looks like stabby. And the more spikes it has, like if you see a spike ball, the spikes all around it, that's telling you danger, right? And then a square is more of a kind of a neutral. It might mean danger. It might mean that it's fine, right? But the aesthetics of game art and game design kind of shows you how to break all this stuff down, right? And like the reasons why you'd choose to make a Koopa look this way and to make Bowser look this way, right? If you're not artistic, this is the kind of article that can get you on the same page with an artist where you're speaking the same language. So it's really good to read. Number six, how Zelda gets lock and key puzzles right. So the quote is, repeat after me, lock before key. Memorable, it stays with you. And I like read this in my head. I repeat this to myself as I'm designing games sometimes, right? Where I'll be like, ah, I just made a key and I have no lock for it. This key is useless. So let me get into this. It's a simple principle, but it's easy to miss it. The overall message is to provide something the player wants before how to get it. Here's a great example. Say you're playing a Zelda game or Dark Souls or something, and you enter a new area. The first thing you see is a big, shiny treasure chest. It's just out of reach. Maybe it's behind a locked gate, or you know, you can see through the gate, through the bars, or it's up on a hill and you can't reach it. Either way, you want it, the game has got you, but you don't know how to get it. Now, if it gave you a key first, you enter a new area and you're like, I got this key. Like, you're like, okay, I'm looking for a lock. But like, you don't even know if there is a lock. You haven't seen it, right? Now, the deeper secret to this is anything can be a key or a lock. It doesn't always have to be as simple as a door and a key or a locked chest and a key, right? Say there's a pit you can't cross. That's a lock. A key could be wings or flying boots or whatever. Water you can't lock, float across, right? That's a lock. A key could be a boat or a ladder, or you could dry up the water with like a fire wand or something so you can cross, right? Lock and key, great design tools. All right, last in the list. This is last in the list because I think it's a last in a lot of indie developers' minds, right? But what makes an indie hit? How to choose the right design? If you're at all interested in making money with your games, which I know not everybody is, and that's cool, but you must read this great article by Ryan Clark of Brace Yourself Games. It's a practical guide that covers being realistic about your ideas, designing ideas with hooks, which grab people's attention, and doing a market analysis to see how your game might perform on the market. And you want another jumping off point? So Clark Tank with Ryan Clark. This was a weekly show where Ryan would walk through the Steam top sellers list, analyze the market, watch some trailers, see what genres were on the rise, what was on the fall. So many videos, hours of insights, and he kind of shows you his process for being educated about the market, right? Such a good, pragmatic look at it. And it's like, after you see it, you're like, oh, obviously, why haven't I been doing this? It's that kind of good. I will be linking to all of this stuff in the show notes. I don't know what exactly that looks like yet because it's the first episode, but it will definitely be on Vladria.com. All right, so let's start to wind this down. Since we're nearing the end, let's dive into those tips I promised earlier. Here's the first tip about retaining this knowledge, right? Because I know I've thrown a lot at you, and maybe you're busy getting lost somewhere in GameDeveloper.com or YouTube. Whew, YouTube is an ocean itself. It's 100 masterclasses wrapped up on YouTube. But anyway, retaining this knowledge is important, right? Because you might watch 5 or 6 videos and you only remember 3 or 4 points, right? So here are some tips on how to retain the knowledge. First of all, bookmark, obviously, right? You can save as in a playlist on YouTube. You can bookmark in Google Chrome or whatever browser you use. This is all obvious stuff. Like if you don't want to use any of that stuff, text file with the links and notes. Anything is fine as long as you track the stuff that you want to, you know, keep in your toolkit, right? I think organizing is important, right? Because like I said, I have hundreds, maybe thousands of this stuff, of these things bookmarked. So I like to kind of, maybe you can tag them in whatever system you use, but I like to organize them as job, right? Design, art, programming, marketing. Also, I will sometimes have folders like to do and then done, like to, like a read or watched. And then in addition to that, sometimes I'll tag them or put them in a folder, which is, watched, excellent, or, you know, like done, hold on to, like cream of the crop kind of things, right? Which leads us to point number 3 within this tip bucket or whatever, but it's repetition, right? Like that's one of the reasons it's important to organize this stuff is because, like, I watched an hour long YouTube video the other day. It was a GDC talk, and man, I'm just sitting there nodding my head. I'm like, oh, these are great points, you know, and I took a couple of notes, but like, I've got to watch it again. It honestly takes sometimes a couple of watches to kind of really fully digest the material, you know? So that's an important one is go back, like your favorite ones that you've, you know, bookmarked or whatever as to do great, you know, go back and repeat those. Lastly is teach/write. So I'm doing this a lot on my blog, my newsletter, and with my Twitter threads and stuff. But if you take in this information you learn out there and on the web or from people or whatever, and you know, you digest it and it's in your head, maybe you'll retain it and maybe you'll apply it to your own work. But if you write an article about it, you really have to understand it, right? And the process of digesting it and then kind of editing it in your mind and then creating new words describing that stuff, that whole process of teaching and writing and blogging or whatever really helps to solidify that information in your head. So that's been really helpful for me. Okay, last tip of the day is this, and this is for those of you who want to take a deeper dive, especially into specific disciplines. So for any talk that you enjoyed or article that you enjoyed reading and you think this person, I could learn stuff from this person, go look them up, right? Find their personal website, their work website, follow them on Twitter, see what they're interested in. But next is an important step. See who they follow and repeat this process for those people. Everybody always has people that they admire, that they think are doing their craft better than they can, right? The world is so big, and even your favorite artist is probably the kind of person who will see artists from another artist and think to themselves, oh, it's gorgeous. I wish I could do that. I am so far behind. And, you know, everybody feels that way. It's basically this giant chain, right? And you just happen to be at one particular link in that chain. So one of the ways I like to think about it is kind of like a tree branch. I guess it may be better than a chain. But, like, you know, you find game developer A that you admire. And then they follow B, C, and D. Go follow them and see who they follow. And eventually, like, you know, if audio is your thing, you can follow, you know, the best people doing audio or whatever your discipline is. All right. I hope this has been helpful and that you've now discovered at least one new place to go learn about game development. If you read and watch all the stuff I mentioned in this episode, seriously, you will level up as a game dev. I believe that. To entice you to subscribe to the show and keep listening to me obsess about game development, here are some ideas I have for future episodes. Finding your passions and what drives you to make games. How to take your creative side seriously. 7 tips from 7 days of 7-day roguelike. I just posted this to my newsletter today. And then improving your game dev skills in unexpected ways. Like I said earlier, cooking is a common one for me. I've also been doing some painting recently, and I think I'm picking up some game dev tips. And of course, we will be doing interviews, and you can expect one from with Jeff Blair from Lost Cast for all you Lost Cast fans. So stick around for that. Lastly, you can support me in this show by buying a copy of my book, How to Make a Video Game All by Yourself, available as a paperback from Amazon or digitally on Kindle, Google Play, and others. You are being played out by Hear What They Say by Kevin MacLeod, which is a free public domain song that you can use in your own video game or other projects. Get a link to download it in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and now it's time for you to go make the game. Thank you.
Make the Game with Elizabeth Holmes.